Another year. Year.
Yes. Welcome to Game of Owns. We're back. We've been here, but we're back to the basics, as in we're back to the on season, as in let's make it to the Twins, as in A Storm of Swords. Yours truly, Micah and Eric, we're here. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
I was waiting for people to say hello back. Yeah, we always say hello, everyone, and then we don't hear
this week's episode of Game of Thrones was recorded in front of a live studio audience. They are all very busy right now. They're silent and busy. Strike is actually entertaining them, and they each have individual dog treats. So as they feed my dog, we are sitting here in front of a very echoless chamber. It's a very soundproof room in front of all of these people, and we're recording this new episode. We're happy that you all have joined us. It's been a few weeks since we've been back to normal form, but we hope that you have enjoyed the recent episodes. We know that we've had a blast making them, and just in general, before we start off, can I say, take a deep breath. What an exciting build up to season 5 it's been, and we have 21 days left as of recording this episode.
Mm-hmm. 3 weeks? Gosh. That's it?
3 weeks.
It's unreal. But we've had a lot of fun, though. You mentioned the previous couple of episodes. I know having Ozzyman come on was a treat.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but he's fucking hilarious. And just being able to talk with him for, was it probably about 2 hours? He's got a lot of fire inside of him, and you know, he's just cracking jokes left and right. And then Andrew last week, getting to talk a little bit of spoiler content, looking at the trailer, what you know we can expect in season 5. I know a lot of people enjoyed that episode. So as you mentioned, though, now it's back to the basics. It's the three of us, and we get to jump into a couple chapters here. The penultimate chapter with Catelyn. We were so scared of doing this that we took a couple weeks.
We just
off.
Put it off.
It's pretty terrifying. Mm-hmm.
Last week's episode, obviously, wasn't able to listen. Eric also had to leave the room and wasn't able to listen. You didn't press your ear to the door, theoretically, or literally, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Eric and I remain unsullied. I wanted to listen badly because it's, you know, it's Game of Thrones. It's the show that we all make together. And I heard really great feedback from friends that actually listen to the show that are more interested in the book. Some of my friends are book readers. Actually, all of my friends are book readers because most of the people I know that enjoy Game of Thrones actually bite the bullet. It shouldn't be bite the bullet. They get to enjoy the books, unlike Eric and I, unfortunately. For you,
we remain unsullied for your pleasure.
For your pleasure.
It's not for our pleasure.
I got a text from my buddy Eric a few days, my other friend Eric with a K, a few days ago, and he was like, oh my God, I wish that you knew. I wish that you knew. and it's kind of sad, but luckily, long story short, this is a roundabout way to say folks enjoyed that collective little release of tension, I guess, that you guys got to have together. That sounds more interesting than it is, I think.
Are you talking about the spoiler episode?
Yeah, I'm talking about the spoiler episode. So I'm glad that was able to happen for you and for the rest of the people listening.
It's interesting. It all kind of stemmed out of us, a group of us actually, the night before had dinner. And even at the dinner, you have to be very careful on what you say. Didn't want to spoil too many people there. And you know, the decision was made, let's do a spoiler episode. And it's always good having another person who's sullied be part of the discussion. But then when you get the opportunity to talk one-on-one with somebody like that, I thought he had a lot of great ideas about, you know, certain storylines and the reasoning behind certain decisions and just general theories and talking about season 5, talking about beyond book 5, you know, with the Winds of Winter
hopefully approaching.
We'll see. I know we have a little bit of news about that, but it's always great to have those discussions because I do have to be careful in my conversations with both of you because I just don't want to let anything slip. I mean, I feel like that would be unfair. I mean, Zach can always edit it out at the end of the day so that the listeners don't hear it. But
I can't edit it out of my brain, though.
Well, you could maybe you could try. I don't know, but
there are ways.
No, but I you know, being friends with both of you, I would not want to do that. You know, I want you to organically experience things as we read through, and you know, we get to enjoy the TV show together, obviously. Mm. So. It was a lot of fun to be able to do that last week.
Well, we've made it this far, Eric. High five.
Yeah, high five.
Yes, nice. Now we come together in terms of the show. We're all going to be unsullied, I feel like, headed into this season.
That's the good word. That's what I hear. I also hear that George R. R. Martin is clearing his con schedule to finish The Winds of Winter, to echo what
you're
saying,
Micah. This makes me happy. This makes me really happy.
Not too bad.
It makes Eric happy, but it makes me happy too.
Of course.
You were about to say something controversial, and then you backed down.
Well, I feel like I've said this on the show before. If I were in George R. R. Martin's position, where, you know, a couple of years ago, I was just writing this really elaborate and intense story, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire, and then really because of HBO and because of what David and Dan created, it blows up into this monumental television series, and that caused more people to pick up my book. I'd be looking to reap all those benefits. I'm not just talking about monetary benefits. I'm talking about, you know, life. Being able to travel the con circuit, because, you know, I'm sure he was well known. There's other projects and other things that he's worked on, but
yes,
not nearly to the level that he is now. And the demand that he's in now, I'm sure, is, you know, 10 times, 50 times, 100 times higher than what it was before. So if I were in his position, there's no way that I would want to turn down these opportunities. I'd want to take advantage of anything and everything that was put before me.
You got to think about this. We've been to conventions. We know how this kind of works, but there are quite possibly negative repercussions to him being at cons. If he's at these cons, I mean, how many people do you think walk up to him? You know, disrespectful people who should never have been allowed in the door are going to walk up to him and say, finish the book. Why aren't you writing?
Right.
You know, every opportunity, every public appearance he makes is actually another opportunity for somebody who's jilted, for somebody who is waiting for that next, you know, 1,000-page tome to be released, to give him shit about it. And I'm not saying, you know, and this article, it's not clear that he didn't say anything about experiencing, you know, negative stuff in this article, but I feel like that's a real risk that's being run. You know, if he were to continue to go to San Diego Comic-Con this year, you know, just all the places where like all the fans are, I can imagine it would very quickly have the potential to grow out of control if people are thinking for one second that he is there because he isn't writing or doesn't want to write.
I think work is a process, and I think that he's produced what he's produced so far, and we have to trust that he knows what he's doing. So I kind of consider this just not my business or not anyone's business, you know? But I love that there are people that are so, and I count myself among them, just with a slightly different way to handle it, but I love that people are excited enough and love something enough to step into someone else's kind of domain and say, hey, you maybe should change what you're doing. I mean, it's nice. The thought is there behind everything. There's a nice motivation, but I think it could be carried out in a different way. And I'd hate to make that be part of the reason why he's doing this. I'd like the reason for him to do this inside of his own mind be his decision to say, I love doing the con circuit, just zeroing in on one thing, because I know he's a very busy person aside from writing The Winds of Winter. He's doing a lot. So I'd like for this decision, if it were me, to be something that was incepted on my own rather than making a decision based on what loud screaming people are saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how can you begrudge the man the opportunity to go to San Diego Comic-Con or to other events that are taking place, not just here, but throughout the world? And so I will say that the show has put him in a predicament, more so than anything else, because it's now either caught up or catching up to most of the storylines and the point of views that he's written in these books. And you know, traditionally, he's been somebody who has taken a long time in between releases. So for the fans of the book series that have been there along the way, you know, this kind of time frame is not unusual to them. You know, they're used to it. Of course, everybody would want him to write faster, but now he's getting pressured to finish this book, and now we're starting to see it become more of a reality where he's actually publicly stating, I need to stop with all these appearances. I need to focus on finishing this book, because if I don't, there's a very good chance that the show could end up spoiling a lot of what my readers have been anticipating for, you know, 25 years.
Like Mr. Martin, I am hopeful. This was a piece of his blog post. He said, should I complete and deliver Winds of Winter, of which he calls Son of Kong. Before these cons roll round, I reserve the right to change my mind. So let's all hope that it all works out beautifully, right?
Yeah, there these next go. Couple of months. He obviously didn't write this season for the show because of this. And that would mean to me, if he's able to finish the book prior to, let's say, San Diego Comic-Con, mm-hmm. there's a good chance it'll be released at the end of this year.
Interestingly, Sue the Fury had a nice comment on that on this article on Watchers on the Wall. And she just says she would really prefer the editing process not be rushed.
Right.
I guess she feels it was with Dance with Dragons. It's an interesting comment. I've never heard that comment before. But just like, so her opinion would be that, you know, it should still be given its proper run in the editing room.
Definitely.
And, you know, following his, of course, completion of the book. So there's that. But even if it comes out, you know, early next year, spring next year, I think it'll answer a lot of questions for people. Maybe it'll, you know, somehow be a point of reconciliation between what happens this coming season and what hasn't happened yet in the books. Maybe it'll have a lot of that stuff, or, you know, in his own way, the way that it was intended, the way that it is happening in the books, because after this book, there's only going to be one left, right?
That's the plan.
Yeah, that is the plan. But yeah, there's a very good chance, though, that the end of season five could leave a lot of open-ended, and probably will leave a lot of open-ended questions that he's probably looking to answer in the Winds of Winter. So if he is able to get this book out fall, winter of 2015, I think it will kind of fill the appetite of book readers who watch season five.
The thought of the HBO series spoiling things in the book has been a topic of our conversations throughout this off season, and then just throughout it's just what we all talk about. It matters. All of you listening understand. I don't need to set it up. You get it. Can we just say that George R. R. Martin, the man who created all of this, when he has his stage, when he has his book drop, the first book since the huge success of this series, I mean, it's like, you guys have been, okay, there's stuff in the show that you think may point things in different directions. I'm going to drop this book and it's going to blow it all open. You know what I mean? I can't wait. I wish more than anything that the second it came out, I would be able to read it. This is hard. I don't want to talk about it. Everyone's going to be getting their Winds of Winter. They're going to be going to their midnight release parties, which I'm sure I'll be at. And they'll be like holding it up and like, don't show it to
gosh.
Me. Don't
can you imagine showing up? Inside
jacket.
Yeah. Can you imagine showing up for like the midnight release parties and handing your book to someone else? It's just like,
yep. I'm going to be.
We got it.
Edition.
Here you go. Yeah. Here you go, Micah.
It's going to be so awesome. You know, they're going to be hardback. They're going to be amazing. It's going to be a great moment. And to all of you listening that are going to be there to buy it and read it that night and stay up like we did in days of old, in our childhood, in our teen years, etc. I'm very jealous of you. Darn it.
Maybe I'll just go through reading like four Harry Potter books is the equivalent of reading one Song of Ice and Fire in terms of page count. Maybe that's what I'll do while everyone else is reading overnight.
Well, bring on the page count. That's what I say. This book can't be big enough.
I completely agree with that statement. Completely. 100%. I don't know what mysteries are happening in the books in, you know, come book five that need to be wrapped up. I don't know where characters are at. I'll reiterate that. But if it's anything like where the show is going, it'll be super exciting and super, I don't want to say convoluted, but just rich with detail.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of rich, not to pivot too hard, I'd like to tell you all about A Three-Eyed Raven. My friends here on the show, and also those of you listening at home, Brewery Oma Gang, nice, nice folks. Just everyone involved with the show, nice, nice folks, sent over a nice gift wrapped in swaddling. And inside of this swaddling were delicious amounts of the new
raven.
Actually, there was a raven. There was a stuffed three-eyed raven. Swear to Bob.
What?
Swear to George. Yes. So I have a stuffed three-eyed raven now. Strike tried to eat it. He was like, that definitely looks like a toy. And I was like, no, this wouldn't bode well. You're a wolf. He's a three-eyed raven. Let's not go down this path. I felt like it was foreshadowing in my own life that I did not want to start with. And I know that some of the chapters today that we're talking about, I have a huge amount of that. So I try to stay away from it. It's a saison, which is It's if you are familiar with our Patreon series, I won't make a double L joke here, Eric.
It's a lighter than a double, darker than a...
I know that Eric and Micah are both very interested in beer. Micah specifically is a very boisterous Robert Baratheon-like beer fan. Micah, are you excited to try this beer?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed all the beers that have been made themed Game of Thrones, and I'll definitely be... I don't know if I'll be the first in line.
I will be. That's because I will be. I don't know if I
like
Sice on
Hill. I have to give something to Eric, you know?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you got to let him shine a little bit. So.
You can have one spot ahead of me in line. That's what I'll give you.
You know what? But I thought about it. You know, I was going to say first in line, and I think when I go to the local package store, you know, are you really the first? There's never anybody in line. Like, so... But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and I know we'll taste it and we'll review it, I'm sure, once we've all had a chance to have a pint or five.
Can I just say the best that they've made so far in this particular series? I'm a big fan of Brewery Oma Gang, and that's definitely because of their partnership with HBO and our relationship with them over the years. Phil Lionheart came on last year. Check out that episode, guys, if you haven't listened to it. We talked
it's
a lot
good episode.
About
He's the
process.
Head brewmaster at, the brewmaster at Oma Gang. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. And I'm also looking forward to going this summer, possibly during one of the music festival series, but definitely touring the brewery this summer. And I'm hopefully going to bring you guys along. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Eric will finally get to go to Cooperstown.
Yeah, Micah. So far away.
I was in a store. I'm in Los Angeles, sunny Southern California right now.
So
and I was able to go to a store unlike that I've usually gone to during my travels, and I was vastly impressed by the selection. There's lots of Oma Gang things there, and inside was a generous helping of Valar Morghulis, the double ale that we love so much.
Nice.
Right? And I, like a very lame person, decided to get that instead of anything different, something that I've gotten and have had plenty. And whatever. So I was checking out. I want to tell you guys this story. I was checking out, and there were a handful of gals that were running the register area, and they were all individually excited about Game of Thrones, and they started chattering about the fifth season coming. They started chattering about wishing that they would have kept and collected the older beers, and they started chattering about the new one that's coming out, and they were like, oh, I hope it's good, and I was like, me too, wink. I didn't spoil it, but so that's cool, right? This is it's fun to see a community like this and in all of the different places of the world, and to see the scale of the expanse of the series and the joy it brings to those that like it. It's a good thing to be a part of right now. 20 days remain.
Just last night, I met a guy who has read all the books too at a party. And it's just like, that was the one thing that I could relate to. We talk about Thrones for a while. Not spoilery, but still just Thrones.
Yeah, right. No,
like the fact that I know everything now, guys.
Eric has known everything since
surprise.
The day we recorded.
He's a great actor. Wonderful actor.
Well, thank you. No, but I really don't, and I really haven't. And what Zach was saying about just, you know, these strangers, this group of ladies very excited about Thrones that you didn't know, and that you just came to this store, and there they were, and they were talking about it excitedly. Mostly due to your purchase, and it's exciting to see how excited everybody across the world is for this TV show.
Yeah, absolutely. I what's your favorite beer, by the way, out of all of them that have been released so far?
The new one, the Saison, is so good.
Yeah.
The Three-Eyed Raven, it was
Eric's going to go with that even though he hasn't drank
it yet. No, I'm not going to go. I've had precious little of the Lannister Blonde Ale, the first one. I had it once, and it was at a theater, and it
you
was
had
on
just
tap,
a mouthful.
Just a mouthful, and not a lick more. So I would say that was pretty good from what I remember, but the Fire and Blood...
Smoky
is my favorite.
I thought you were a Blondale fan.
Well, I just said the Blondale, but I didn't have enough of it to really remember or inform my opinion.
Maybe you
but
had
the,
too much of it to remember.
Yeah, I was going to say
Fire and Blood Red Ale was my favorite so far.
It's beautiful that we can talk about this and talk about how long it's been out and just realize how much time has passed and that things are still going, they're still strong, they still feel so exciting. It's great. I challenge all of you listening. If you want to put yourself in a situation to feel close to others that you don't know, which is a great feeling, wear a Game of Thrones shirt. Go buy a Game of Thrones beer. Listen to your podcast with the screen on your phone, and maybe someone on the transit that likes Game of Thrones can also see it and think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Whenever we release the upcoming Valar Mosuisis. I think that's how you say it. All been must drink Game of Thrones shirt that, yeah, that so or much of you Mosuisis, have been clamoring for. Moses,
I don't know. We got to ask that guy.
Pick it up, wear it proudly, and enjoy season 5 with maybe people that you've never met and enjoy a different part of the world.
Yeah. I was just going to add that I was riding the train into work this past week, and there was a guy next to me who was reading Storm of Swords.
There you go.
Works.
And he was getting towards a particular part of the book.
You were reading his book?
Well, it was open. He was right next to me, literally.
Mike is a very close companion on public transit. Right.
If you've ever ridden public transit, everybody's a close companion in New York City.
Okay.
So let's say he was getting towards the end of the book, which caused a lot of controversy this past season.
Oh.
We all know. But anyway, I had thought in my mind about saying something to him, depending on whether or not he reached that point in the story by the time we got into the station. I also thought about mentioning the podcast, but you know, it all depends on the situation, because people on public transportation can be a little weird about anybody actually speaking to them. So I tried to just let it go.
Played it cool. Played it cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, slipped him like a little note or something.
Like a business. Yeah, like on a post-it. Like a, hey,
listen to Game of Thrones.
Spoiled
it. We do need business cards.
Spoiled the ending for him right before he gets to it. He's like, oh, I've managed to ignore all of the spoilers until now. Thank you.
But it is amazing to me overall to see how many people are reading the series, not just Storm of Swords, which I guess is a little bit more aligned with what the last two seasons have been about, but you know, reading into the future with A Feast for Crows, A Dance with Dragons. You see a lot of it, especially now with the season, as you mentioned, Zach, 3 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
It's ramping up, so people are trying to know what to expect. But I don't think any of us are going to know what to expect. That's the best part.
I'm excited. And I'm excited to dive into this reading. Yes. I think that these chapters today, for me, getting more perspective around what is happening nearby the Red Wedding, inside of the Twins, approaching the Twins, feeling the ominous presence of those towers, all of it made it much more for me. And I wasn't disappointed, because I wanted to feel this weight as it happened. I wanted to feel a clear difference between the show and the book. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't let down. There's a clear strength here that can't be communicated through the television series, which is obvious to guess, but it was very present. And I cannot wait to read the next chapter after these two setup chapters. Unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. No, the Twins are exciting. I mean, I'm going through the series again, and there's that brief period in season one where they have to cross the crossing, and Catelyn goes and treats with Walder Frey and has to make the agreement, which of course is betrayed, or you know, Rob breaks his solemn vow. But just learning, getting to see who Walder Frey is from the show perspective too, to see if there's any kind of foreshadowing because the third book was out, to see kind of how I can read that man. And then reading this this book where, you know, they return to him after Rob has broken his vow, and to just see how far he's willing to take treating them, and just noting the vulnerable position that Rob and Catelyn are both in and have been in ever since they left Riverrun. Mm-hmm. And even since, you know, Lord Hoster died, and things are just amiss with death and rain and all this stuff.
They had to do was bring back Mrs. Norris and everything would have been fine.
Oh,
you
man.
Killed my cat. I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Zach,
you raised a really great point, because I remember, because it just happened a couple of hours ago, reading through this chapter and just the level of detail and the foreboding, the ominous nature of how things are written. I highlighted a bunch of stuff, but the fact that the river, the Green Fork, is referenced as being a boiling torrent.
Mm-hmm.
The gatehouse towers of the Twins emerged from the rain like ghosts, hazy gray apparitions that grew more solid the closer they rode. And it's just this, if you don't know what's about to happen, you should get a feeling that
Something
bad's coming down the road.
Tension.
In the next couple of chapters.
Reaching a boiling point.
And Catelyn, Rob, listen to me. Once you have eaten of his bread and salt, you have the guest right, and the laws of hospitality protect you beneath his roof.
She hopes.
You know, she is on it. She feels what's happening. The rain has been falling so steadily over the course of these past few chapters and during our break with these last two episodes. The rain has been falling so steadily that they can hear the Green Fork before they see it. That the waters are so changed from the last time they were here that they need the phrase even more than they did before. Mm-hmm. Yet they come bearing apologies. They come with humility. They come with a terrible situation. The king being disrespected the moment they arrive. Grey Wind reacts poorly to their visiting welcoming party. It's not going well. What is the first thing said to them? They're like, is this how Stark makes an amend? A poor greeting, I call it, to set your wolf upon us? Is this why you've come? Just not a good way to start it. And this is the king, mind you. These people should be bowing and saying, Your Grace.
That's really the whole thing, isn't it? Because Lord Walder Frey is a sworn bannerman to the Tullys and to the North here. He doesn't owe... Rob Stark doesn't owe him anything, except now that the vow's been broken, he's able to play this victim, and he's able to insult, you know, this whole chapter spent insulting and really trying and taxing Rob and his mom and everybody. You know, they have to put up with insult after insult as a result of the broken vow. But ultimately, Rob is his king, and he is behaving like a spoiled child. There's even Catelyn, when she first walks in and sees the late Walder Frey, who does not greet them at the gates, which, by the way, is slight number one, you know, says he looks like a child as well. There's this weakness. There's this frailty in his body where he can't get up and kneel, or he says, and he's sucking at the air like, you know, a baby sucking at its mother. So there's a lot of very interesting references to vulnerable states too, because when you're a baby, you're obviously very vulnerable. You need somebody to care for you. And there's this real harshness that Walder wants to, I don't know, basically his whole castle inflicts upon Stark's men.
It's just not a great welcoming committee for Rob, as you mentioned. You would expect a little bit more than three sons and grandsons of the late Walder Frey to greet him upon his arrival. And we know that the weather is bad, but
he has a litter.
Yeah, exactly. He does. And you think that even at 90 plus years old, he could get his ass up and go out and be protected. He's got his own wooden umbrella. So it's really important that the rain is happening, really, because I think it masks a lot. Yes, it sets the tone of it reminded me a bit of Greek mythology as they arrive here at the Twins, because it's almost like the river is acting as is it Charybdis?
Yeah, Charybdis, the sea monster.
I like this.
Yeah. The whirlpool, actually, not the one in a cave.
It just seems Scylla. Like everything that is around it is about to be destroyed. But in terms of the rain, it really masks, even Catelyn mentions it, as she looks across the turbulent waters, impossible to distinguish colors and devices. Most were gray, it seemed to her, though beneath such skies, the whole world seemed gray.
You're talking about banners. You're talking about the cloths that these men have as they're going in.
Exactly.
And she doesn't know what side they're on.
If it was a bright, sunny day, she might be able to distinguish, or at least other people in Rob's party, the fact that there could be a lot of danger now that has arrived at the Twins. And I think you get a sense of that when we read the next Arya chapter.
Definitely.
As she comes across a lot of banners that she doesn't recognize.
Well, I think, too, it does matter who has shown up for this wedding and who hasn't shown up. I know later in the chapter, after they meet with Walder Frey, and Catelyn is given some leave, some time to walk around, and, you know, ends up meeting with Roose Bolton, he tells her about the men that couldn't make it. And I want to talk a lot about that later, but in general, there's these men that are loyal to her, are supposed to be loyal to you know, Rob, basically King in the North. And it's a question because even some of the Freys that have helped them in the past are not in attendance. There's the previous squire. There's one of the Freys who had helped Catelyn previously also is not there. And it's a real question as to why are these, you know, these strange absences are occurring. Something is off, on the wrong foot. Catelyn has known this. And now that she's here, it's just this impending dread, like the pounding of a drum is just beating down on her and getting worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. That's the opening sentence of the following Catelyn chapter,
yeah,
right?
That was intentional.
Yeah, that was well done.
Thanks. But no, like this whole chapter where it's basically like is Walder Frey torturing Rob.
Just like the show. I think they pulled it off well, right? That
yeah.
Just like, you want it to stop. You want it to end.
I'm glad you mentioned the show because, again, in season one, when Catelyn goes to him, he complains to her that Lord Hoster Tully hasn't attended the last two of his weddings. And just like in general, he feels pissed on. And it's really this pride that Frey is known to have. And of course, Catelyn warns Rob about this. Rob says, "I know the Freys, mother. I know how much I wronged them and how much I need them. I shall be as sweet as a septon." She's warning him that he's just going to get attacked, like really verbally, going to have to put up with a lot of shit when he gets in the room. And he thinks he can handle it. And handle it, yes, he does. But Frey is obviously not going to stop there. This was only the beginning. You know, it's crazy to think this has actually been planned in advance, what is going to happen, with the seeds of which are, you know, happen in this chapter, and of course the rest which conclude in the next chapter. Oh. That this is a grand plan, that Frey knew that, you know, about this in advance, what he's about to do to the king that he should be kissing the ass of, but he won't because he's prideful.
It's made so much worse when I didn't know that this meeting with Roose Bolton took place this way. And he's in there with this pale pink cloak and he's helping strategize and he's talking about future circumstances and he's talking about Ramsay and he's talking about giving justice for the dead Stark boys. And he's speaking about the Greyjoy threat in the North and like, I feel like they're actually making strategic moves. But in reality, he's just sitting there and being like, yeah, well,
yeah, it's such a cold and calculating move that he's about to play out in the next chapter, or at least the next Catelyn chapter. And it's just all so, reading it back through, it's just so hard because you see all the pieces of the puzzle coming together. Mentioned earlier is the fact that Greywind wants none of this. You know, he can sense it. He knows something is wrong.
Yeah.
And the fact that Rob's men are put, you know, far away from him, if they will cross and set up their camp beside our own. This is one of the Freys talking. "We will bring out enough casks of wine and ale for all to drink the health of Lord Edmure and his bride. We have thrown up three great feast tents on the far bank to provide them with some shelter from the rains." So
far bank.
Yeah, far bank. All of his men are going there. Obviously the men of note are able to come into the twins with Rob, but it should have been a signal to Rob. At least it would have made me uncomfortable if you're taking all of my men and putting them as far away from me as possible.
And it's all done with this courtesy. It's all done with this hope, right? That, this promise of wine for all of his men too. It's like part of the safety, part of the rules of hospitality that Catelyn says to Rob. She reminds him she's really relying on them that's like their sole protector. Basically, I mean, as soon as the initial conversation with Walder Frey is over, that confrontation is over, she interrupts and asks specifically for salt
and
specifically, yeah, and bread, because the book says salt and bread. So if he gives you anything else, it's not protected, but salt and bread, please. Thank you.
And throw it over your left shoulder.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Walder knows exactly what's up,
but it means shit to him.
It means
he doesn't
shit to
care.
Him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, so promising wine for his men is also, I think, an extension of that, where it's like, yeah, you'll be separated from them, but hey, we're all going to drink to the health of of Edmure and his new wife, Rosalind. We're all very happy about that. And notice they ask about Jane Westerling too, which is, I found to be interesting because it's a big difference from the show when she is there. they ask about her. And of course, Catelyn and Rob actually lie and say that she was too tired to come, when we know in fact that she wanted to come. But it's just not wise. It wouldn't have been wise to bring her. And the phrase played off like, oh, you know, she must be so beautiful for a king to break his vows, that we wanted to see just how beautiful she was so that we could be like vindicated to feel better about how you betrayed us all.
Just so much like, tongue in cheek.
Yeah. Very, 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 very like, surely her beauty is a thing of legend.
Rob in this case is not taking Lord Walder Frey seriously enough. Like, we know that's the case. He was amused when Catelyn mentioned the rules of hospitality, and rightly so. He's comfortably a king. I think the last thing he's expecting is what does happen to happen. You know, I think that they expected the jabs and the way that the jabs were delivered. Mm-hmm. They expected him to say things like, save your royal breath, you do as well, talking to a chamber pot.
Yeah.
Like, he's massively disrespecting the king. You know, when we think about Great John, if Great John were not holding his tongue for the sake of their, because he's there in the room as well. If he, knowing what he does before when he takes up for Rob, like, that man would have stepped forward and just decked Walder Frey in the face for that. You know, just like knocked all of his old teeth out. But they're trying so hard to please the situation. You know, and it's just George wrote a perfectly crafted scenario where a king that should be strong and proving himself in the face of all of the danger and the trouble that they're facing. Mm-hmm. He created a scenario where the king can enter a situation and need to be apologetic and need to be able to take these kinds of hits. So we get this kind of tension in the story, and we get this kind of ebb and flow that would not take place under normal circumstances. And it leads to what it leads to, which is a bit extreme. So it goes from Lord Walder Frey's jabs and his immature mutterings to a very serious situation. And the only person that is really feeling it is Catelyn. Edmure isn't. He's a bit distracted with finding out who his new wife is and what she looks like. Which, can I say, I mean, I understand this is a period piece, essentially. Not necessarily actually, but essentially that's what this is. There is just an uncomfortable amount of interest on what this person looks like. I mean, even from Catelyn, she's
like...
you
mean like her hips?
Everything.
You know, childbearing hips. But like, that's a thing.
I get it.
About that.
She went to the maester to find out
if
she'd actually be able to have children. I do think a lot of attention is being placed on this, and I guess it's just the time that they live in.
I mean, I get it. Like I said, it makes complete sense. But geez, I mean, I shudder to think. I really hope that. I don't want to be naive and say that I hope that it wasn't this way in our world. I'm sure it was worse, and in some places it still is. But for the love of God, like, it's rough to be a girl in this situation. Just I hope that I look good enough to be accepted for whatever's about to happen to me against my will. It's just rough.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're 100% right.
Really shitty.
Yeah. And
really,
to
really
have
shitty.
Catelyn judge this woman this way. Well, I think it's also due to her. It's due to her suspicion, right? Because we get this girl. My favorite part of this chapter is when Walder brings all his girls forward and makes Rob apologize to each and every one of them.
She should have, by the way. All right. This apology is founded because Rob, like a moron, broke his vow to someone that is already kind of an asshole. So you should apologize to all of these girls, no matter if you're the king.
And also sorry that you have the dad that you have, because, or like the grandfather that you have for some of them.
Sorry for,
like,
that too.
Sorry for that. Sorry for everything in general. But that's like my favorite part. And then, you know, we get to see Lady Rosalind, who Edmure is clearly, like, his jaw drops to the floor like a cartoon character. And Catelyn is just trying to think of, you know, legit reasons why this is yet another slight, because they've gotten nothing but slights ever since they got there. So Catelyn, you know, does her due, like, follow up. She keeps it to herself. She doesn't complain to Edmure, who is seeing stars right now. Mm-hmm. But even Edmure asks after the fact, you know, why would, this is a quote, why would the old weasel refuse to let me choose unless he meant to foist off someone hideous? So it's a situation where Edmure, again, wanted his pick, but was not given it. Lord Walder has chosen this girl, and he chose actually a pretty girl, even though there were quite a few who Edmure would have been forced to marry, who would not have pleased him visually as much. And this is a cause for concern. Mm. How is it that she's actually beautiful, or actually really pretty. She has this cute gap in her teeth. Why is he being nice when he hasn't been nice in any other way?
I think it has nothing to do with being nice. I think he's being very calculated in how he's going about this, because if he gives Edmure a pretty daughter to wed, there's a good chance then that Edmure will be happy. And Edmure is right now, River Run is his.
Yep.
And any child that is born between the two of them, between Edmure and Roslyn, is heir to River Run. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's what Walder Frey cares most about at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think also calculating in the sense to make them feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, it's a great diversion, isn't it? Even for us, make us feel more comfortable.
And if you remember, though,
this ugly girl, I actually gave you this beauty.
Speaking of Rosalyn, she's crying when she's first introduced to everybody. She knows something's up.
Yeah.
That is a good point. I didn't consider that, but she
is. And Walder breaks in, "You may weep and whisper after you're wed," with his little cackling laugh.
Oh, shit.
I feel like
this sucks. Yeah. I want to jump through the pages and throw this guy off of a very tall wall. I don't like this.
I also want to jump through the pages.
I really do hope he gets his comeuppance at some point.
Oh, my gosh. I hope we get to see him, John Bradley, come back on the show. I was thinking about that today, and just get some shit, just a spear through his rectum. Just something terrible.
Wow. Okay,
I'm angry about this.
You should be. You should be. Absolutely should be.
David Bradley, I think.
I'm with you. David Bradley.
John Bradley is Sam.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you know, I do what
same
I can.
Same thing. They look alike. Brothers.
I do what I can. Sorry, John Bradley. I don't want your rectum to be.
I think that with Walder Frey, too, knowing what's going to happen, knowing this whole thing, do you think that Edmure is not going to hold it against Roslyn, right? I mean, we haven't seen anything from Edmure since the Red Wedding in the show. Mm. And I assume that, having a pretty wife or a wife that you could probably grow to love, learn to love, is like the smallest consolation to the fact that your entire people were all slaughtered terribly. And when he finds out, heck, I'd love to be in the room to see that terrible response. But I feel like he ultimately probably won't take it out on his wife, right? He's not going to kill this beautiful new bride that he has, because he's probably a little bit more bound to duty. Or how do you think? Do you think this is Lord Walder's thinking, that, you know, give him a wife that he's actually going to care about,
that's
so that
point.
Ultimately, regardless of my actions, he is going to deal with it and I'll still have that heir? Or do you think Edmure's first reaction is going to be to kill his wife?
Edmure doesn't strike me as a bad guy. I think that he's a big time dunce and he's very thick, but I don't think that that's the kind of recoil that we're going to see. But at the same time, I feel like he's, amidst his kind of lightheartedness, I think he's also fiercely loyal to the people that he loves, most likely. So I don't know. I know that, Micah, you probably have gotten some time to know what has happened from reading forward. So I'm curious. Don't say anything.
Just keep reading. That's the safest thing to say.
Yeah.
I think that
that's a good point to bring up, though.
Edmure may not, just given everything that we know, probably is not in a position to do any harm, at least immediately, to Roslyn. Because
probably
we know that he is, well, he's also still at the twins. At least that's where we last left him.
Right.
And we know what happened there. So, you know, he's outnumbered as far as being able to do anything.
You know what else I just thought of? He's naked. He's going to be naked during the bedding.
Probably.
So they're going to take his armor. They probably had somebody just take his weapons.
They probably tied him up too. Just like, this will be sexy. Don't worry. And then like, okay, we need to tell you. Everyone's dead. We'll untie you when you relax.
I have no problem saying that his storyline does continue. So we just have to read, and I don't want to comment
good.
Any further. We'll find out more as the story goes on.
Good, because for me, he is very clearly like a prisoner of high value at the Twins. It's like, not only does he kill a king and his mother, and in the show, his wife, the new queen in the north, and also all of the men and the dire wolf, god damn it. But also to have such a captive now as Edmure, and just knowing that Bolton too is like behind it too. It's like Bolton has Edmure as a captive, just like Frey does. And it's like a really terrible position that it puts on the north and all these fucking Bolton men.
Michael Bolton, you dirty bastard. Michael Bolton, you
bastard.
I hate your music. No, this does a great job to paint an even wider point to us, which is all of these pleasantries. I mean, think of this, for example. Ed Muir is the liege lord of these people. He's the guy in charge of River Run, which these people all pledge fealty to. These pleasantries mean nothing when action happens. When things are shaken up, they mean nothing. The king is murdered at his uncle's wedding. His wife is killed in the show. Who knows what happens to his wife in the books? We'll see. His mother is murdered as well. Imagine what's going to happen when shit really goes down. Yeah. None of this means anything. I think that's the point that's being driven home here, which is just relax, everyone. It doesn't matter who you say sir to. And I think it's echoed greatly in the next chapter when the Hound is speaking about how to talk to knights. He's just like, keep your head bowed low, say sir a lot. I mean, these are all people, and at the end of the day, they're all equal, and yet they have to be certain ways to each other. We're seeing, air quotes, small folk and hedge knights and their friends celebrating outside of a locked castle in lowly tents, and they're saying the names of these people, and they're toasting to the names of these people who are getting married. They're toasting to Rob and Queen Jane. They're toasting to Edmure and Rosalind. Mm-hmm. And these people aren't anything to these people and their friends, but maybe they're celebrating because these are the people that are in charge, and the people in charge have created a situation where I can sit in a tent with my friends and drink ale, and they supplied the ale. You know, so it's all relative, and it all makes sense. So we respect the fact that there are these organizational structures that keep everything working. But this is a perfect example of the people that are in charge just saying, well, screw it. You know, we don't care about the way this should go. We don't care about the hierarchy. We want our own setup to be handled a certain way, and it is. And we're seeing the whisperings of it begin now. We're seeing it being sort of teased in front of their face boldly. And Catelyn, I feel, is the only one wise enough to see it. And she's not comfortable with how it's feeling. I don't know. It's painful to read because I feel like the Red Wedding wouldn't have been a surprise to me. Reading it for the first time after these few chapters, especially this chapter.
I mean, I can tell you I didn't see it coming. When I was reading the books, I having the ability to go through and read second time, I know there's plenty of stuff that we picked up in previous chapters, not just, you know, in let's say the last few Catelyn or other point of view characters that are relevant here, but just having interacted with other characters along the way, you know, some of the Jamie chapters that we read and his interactions with Bruce Bolton have definitely lent themselves to, you know, hints, clues that this was inevitably going to happen. And I think even in that final conversation of this chapter, and Zach talked about it before with Bruce Bolton, and you know, Catelyn notes that this is a cold individual.
Oh yeah, brings it up. And just looks at her square in the face and talks about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think if nothing else was telling, when she asks about how many men have you brought my son, and it says his queer, colorless eyes studied her face a moment before he answered. Mm-hmm. It's just like, all right, this dude's up to something.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that they're not having a conversation immediately about the words and exchanges, and the fact that he just had dinner with Jaime Lannister and Brienne is a huge, huge indicator that it's a big red flag. Something's going on. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's just mind-boggling to me. I mean, it's easy to say now because we know what's happening that I feel like something that I would have seen something coming. I definitely wouldn't have seen exactly what happened coming. I definitely wouldn't have seen it coming to the scale that it did, obviously. But I mean, the Bolton situation alone, let alone all the hints through the descriptors, let alone all the hints through the conversations, and let alone Grey Wind, just this conversation with Roose Bolton, it's just like, you don't want him there when you know what he's capable of.
Mm-hmm. And he could be full of shit. This whole story that he's telling Rob about encountering the mountain.
Yeah, it has to be full of shit because, doesn't it? Because there's this alliance that we know of between Bolton and Lannister, and yet he tells Kat that he's lost some men, you know, crossing the river. That he says, I delayed too long before leaving Harrenhal. And he says, hang on one sec. Two-thirds of my strength was on the north side when the Lannisters attacked those still waiting to cross. Nori, Locke, and Burly men chiefly, with Sir Willis Manderly and his White Harbor Knights as rearguard. I was on the wrong side of the Trident, powerless to help them. Sir Willis rallied our men as best he could, but Gregor Clegane attacked with heavy horse and drove them into the river. Mm-hmm. So are we really going to believe that one-third of his men have just died and fallen to the Lannisters? Because if the Lannisters...
Maybe
the
he Boltons, set them up that way, though.
Well, either the Lannisters and the Boltons are on such good terms that they wouldn't attack each other, or these were the men who might have been less loyal to exactly. Bolton specifically and more loyal to... But Catelyn doesn't note that. The reference to these specific families being, you know, on a scale the most loyal to Winterfell is absent from this chapter, but I feel like we could probably infer through context clues that he either did just get rid of all of his, you know, least loyal people... and gotten the Lannisters to do it so that it wasn't suspicious, or he's just straight up lying to her and he just didn't bring those men because he plans to use them somewhere else.
Well, how about the fact that he brings the family? The only other family that he brings is the one who Rob chopped the main dude's head off, Rickard Karstark.
Oh,
right?
The cart, yeah.
He chopped his head off. And that's the family that Roose Bolton
He's
brings.
Like, I've got some people from Carhold.
Doesn't he tell her it's to keep them close? Right? He's like, oh, I think it's important to keep these guys close.
Yeah, or to have a family who's most upset at you right there to help kill you when the time comes. Mm. Poor Arya. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, whatever Bolton just did to a third of his force, whatever didn't happen, is just it's all lies. It's all fucking lies. The Lannisters are on his side now, and knowing that Tywin Lannister it was already the Warden of the East and the Hand of the King West. And all sorts of other junk, to know that he is now that tied in with the North, it's like, again, he's just gaining control of the entire realm.
In Catelyn's words, deftly done, Tywin Lannister, deftly done.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big, big deal what's happening, and we get the real scale of it in this Arya chapter. She's riding up with the Hound, and I'll skip a little bit of that just to speak specifically of how large the celebration is. Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, on a scale that we really didn't get to dive into with the show because I feel like it was early and it wasn't quite at the 8 million per episode budget that we're sitting on now. And I feel like there was so much more to be seen outside of the twins, the celebration of this royal occasion, and it was really cool to be able to see that from this perspective. Apart from all the bad stuff, I thought it was just fun and to know that the Hound was there the whole time and that they're driving a cart that they stole that's full of pickled pig's feet and salted pork.
Gimli I want would, pickled pig's Gimli feet now. I want to try that. Let's see if that's any good. Pickled pig's feet. I just can we just appreciate the Hound like as an actor? Like
as a man among men. Can we just say
as
that?
A man among as men who's like totally just pretending to be someone other than who he is. He's usually this brunt, you know, we're familiar with this brunt guy who's, you know, if his face were uncovered, would give him away for a league in advance, but he's just got a hood on.
Bold of a man that looks like him, Eric, to try to be someone else when half of your face is burnt.
Yeah. And he pulls it off, this knight. Who is this particularly stupid knight? I mean, this isn't just once that the Hound has personally knocked this guy off a horse. He says he claimed several horses and that they actually fought in a melee match once. And this knight just doesn't recognize him. Not only is the Mountain one of the two most recognizable, the Clegane brothers are just, you know, huge, monstrous men who everyone knows because he's probably killed someone you know and love. He's just, you know, put a hood on and all of a sudden he's like Clark Kent or something. He can be anybody else that he wants to be. And Arya, I feel like this is an important lesson too, for someone as bawdy, for someone as bulky as the Hound to pull this off so deftly is like anyone can do it. I think that's like, it's a very short chapter, but that's something that she should take note of. You just need to wear what you're expected to wear. You need to have the right adornments to your, you know, to pull the right wagon. And he's even able to keep Stranger with him.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts. He's like, I'm just going to tie up Stranger to this damn the wagon. I'm not getting rid of Stranger. He's my horse.
Yeah.
The Outriders came on them an hour from the Green Fork as the Wayne was slogging down a muddy road. Keep your head down and your mouth shut. That's the first dialogue, all right, in the whole chapter. Keep your head down and your mouth shut. The Hound warned her as the three spurred toward them, a knight and two squires, lightly armored and mounted on fast palfreys. Clegane cracked his whip at the team. He's just cracking whips as people are riding up to him. Yeah. He probably didn't even need to. A pair of old drays that had known better days. The wain was creaking and swaying, its two huge wooden wheels squeezing mud up out of the deep ruts. That's good imagery. In the road with every turn. Stranger followed, tied to the wagon. And that's when the big farmer comes, or that's when they come up and they're asking who they are. And he's like, "You have business at the Twins?" And he's like, "Yeah, salt pork for the wedding feast, if it please you, sir." He mumbling his reply. He's not even being particularly nice. He's just doing what he has to do to get the ruse through. It's perfect.
And he has a backstory. He does have he's the meanest horse in all the Seven Kingdoms. Let's just say that. But he says, "Oh, it's a gift. It's a wedding gift. My lady told me to bring him, sir. He's a wedding gift for young Lord Tully." It's like, yeah, this new lord would love this beast of a horse. It's crazy.
Stranger is basically one of those horses that you keep showing me from Red Dead Redemption with fire coming off of it.
Yes.
He's basically that horse. And
pretty much.
He's just tethered to the wagon, like I said, because all of this, the best part about this is he didn't need to do this. He's got Arya with him, and he's going to go see Rob. I mean, it's smart for him to smell trouble. But at the end of the day, what he tells to Arya is, "I didn't want to go in chains. Like, I didn't want to go there and be captured and then get released. Like, I want to basically sneak in and I want to be comfortable during this whole process." So for the sake of comfortability, they robbed an old farmer of his wagon, stole everything he had, including his boots. And were like, "All right." So she's learning. She's getting it. All right. You have to do what you have to do to do what you want to do. Plain and simple.
Sometimes you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Well, you always have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. But anyway, it's actually a good thing that the Hound doesn't just turn Arya over to the first person that he encounters, because I think it probably would have resulted in both of them being killed. Maybe Arya would have been ransomed, or they would have put some value on her. But you know, clearly, the Hound is somebody who is not liked by the Lannisters now. And we know that there are Lannister men here, or at least bannermen. And Arya is another Stark. So her life would also be in jeopardy.
And I would hate for Bolton to get his hands on her. I mean, he flays people for crying out loud.
Well, he didn't recognize her the first time.
That's true. That's true enough.
It's interesting to me, though, that both of these chapters, one's coming from Catelyn's perspective, obviously, and the other from Arya's, but both have the same type of intuition as they approach the Twins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they both have the same kind of feeling. Arya, in particular, it says, "Last night she'd had a bad dream, a terrible dream. Her belly was all knotted up tight. She couldn't remember what she dreamed of now, but the feeling had lingered all day. If anything, it had only gotten stronger. There was nothing between her and her mother but a castle gate, a river, and an army. But it was Rob's army," Rob's in italics. "So there was no real danger there, was there?"
And then Roose Bolton is immediately mentioned after that, which is good intuition on her part. She knows that that is Rob's sworn person. She gets that. But she also knows that when she was in Harrenhal, she greatly wanted to escape this person and his friends. So she sees the trouble. She knows. She knows.
Yeah.
I wonder, was it a wolf dream that she had?
Well, that's the thing. It's not explicitly stated. The different Starks, the various Starks, are in different stages of connection with their direwolves. Although Arya has had dreams before, hasn't she? Where she's been
Nymeria.
A wolf in the books, Nymeria. But I feel like this one in particular, it says she doesn't remember it, so it could have been. But I'm thinking like a general sense of dread, led by the same sort of power.
Yeah.
Because the Grey Wind in the previous chapter, like, he knows that he can smell the ill will, I guess.
So much so that he doesn't hear Rob when Rob is calling to him. There's a moment where he kind of breaks out of his trance and finally focuses back on Rob.
So the wolf is tuned into this, and Arya is getting that same supernatural vibe. Catelyn not being blood related to the Starks, I feel, is probably just she's intelligent enough to realize all of the signs of something being amiss. But Arya, I feel like, it's probably brought on by this connection, this power.
Grey Wind felt the insincere intention of the people riding toward him in the welcoming party. You know, like he sensed what was their real intent, whether it was dangerous or whether it was friendly. And let's say he has a higher intuition than a normal dog or a normal wolf would have.
Or human.
Or human. I mean, obviously, because I feel, I mean, it, clearly the animals have a greater sense of that thing than we, that than we do. But he has
strike.
Even, yeah, right. No, he's sleeping right now. He's like, I sense that you're recording and ignoring me, so I will have my rest now.
Yeah,
but that's obviously not the case with the rest of us here. But I feel like the hound, he's sort of like a dog. He kind of knows what's he going is. On. And Arya also knows what's going on, so
yeah,
we're in good.
He's
company.
Got a great line. He's got a great line later on in this chapter. To me, just as this chapter goes on, it gets sadder and sadder because we know the wedding has already taken place. It's briefly mentioned, but I wanted to read this one part. The music from the castles was louder here. The sound of the drums and horns rolled across the camp. The musicians in the nearer castle were playing a different song than the ones in the castle on the far bank, though, so it sounded more like a battle than a song. Hmm. They're not very good, Arya observed. And then the hound says, I've heard Walder Frey's eyes were failing, but no one mentioned his bloody ears. And it's just, you can tell at this point that the music, quote unquote, that they're playing is really to mask what's happening or what is about to happen.
So like at that moment, her mother is being murdered.
Yeah.
And her brother.
Yep.
And she's just like, man, that band sucks. Like, damn. Who hired this band?
Oh, in the next passage, Arya found herself wishing it were day. If the sun was out and the wind was blowing, she would have been able to see the banners better.
Yeah.
She looked for the direwolf of Stark, or maybe the Cerwyn battle axe or the Glover fist. But in the gloom of night, all the colors looked gray. The rain had dwindled down to a fine drizzle, almost a mist, but an earlier downpour had left the banners wet as to shrags, sodden and unreadable. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at the ending, the finish of a storyline that has been going since book one, which is this Catelyn and Rob's journey, which was, of course, more of a book two thing. But this plot line and these characters who we've been with Catelyn all this time, and seeing that terminate and then realizing that part of also like there's still part of Arya. She doesn't know who Queen Jane is. There's this question like they're drinking to the health of Queen Jane. Here's to the young wolf and Queen Jane. Who is Queen Jane? Arya wondered briefly. The only queen she knew was Cersei. So she's out of it. She doesn't really know what her brother has done. Even though we've, you know, as readers know all about it and know why this is happening to Rob and her mother, but she doesn't know. She doesn't know anything about this. She doesn't know anything about the agreement. She's been, just trying to escape, you know, from King's Landing with her life and just wants to see her mom again, but that is not going to happen. This is like in the books too. They're so close together. But it just doesn't happen for these characters. They won't see each other again.
She's so much trying to find something that's familiar to her, right? As she's going through the camp, nothing is familiar to her. Everything is, she says, all she saw were strangers. Mm-hmm. There's no Maester Luwin. There's no Winterfell. There's nothing that she can kind of grasp onto that is going to make her feel comfortable. And yeah, she does see some banners that she recognizes, but mostly it's those, as especially as she gets closer to the castle, that she doesn't recognize. And jeez. I know I mentioned earlier the masking of the music, but even towards the end of the chapter, it's mentioned that Arya heard shouted toasts and the clash of cups mixed in with all the usual camp sounds, horses whinnying and dogs barking, wagons rumbling through the dark, laughter and curses, the clank and clatter of steel and wood. The music grew still louder as they approached the castle, but under that was a deeper, darker sound, the river, the swollen green fork, growling like a lion in its den.
This is,
if that wasn't a hint, I don't know what was.
I feel
dirty, don't you?
No, you pointed out the music, and obviously this was tumultuous to me during my reading and before coming in to record. Obviously, it was clearly important. It meant something. We've been going through this book, yada, yada, yada. And I'm sure all of you at home felt, I mean, George wrote it to feel this way. But after having the knowledge after exploring that the music, I knew the music was to mask it, but that it's masking it happening right now. And that George is writing this knowing what's happening just through the walls that the lordlings are locked inside of. It's just, all of these paragraphs, all of you at home, I challenge you to not only listen to this episode, like, yeah, great, you're hearing us commentate on it. That's wonderful. Read this on your own. And if you're not reading along with us, still go find this passage, find this chapter, go to your bookstore if you don't own the book, and just flip to these pages and read these last handful of paragraphs.
In my paperback, it's 688 is the page that I'm on.
It's like rough. This chapter. I'm looking at it, and each paragraphs are almost perfectly the same length, and they have just different cadence to how sad it is. It's just boom, 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 and just going through different things. Holy shit.
I mean, Arya is thinking whether or not her mom and brother are even going to recognize her because the Hound gave her a haircut. She is still looking forward to it. She's still thinking that it's a possibility that she's ever going to see her mom again. The last time that she saw her mom, which is referenced in this chapter, is when Eddard Stark rode south from Winterfell. I mean, that was so long ago.
Yep.
It's been that long. And so much has happened to these characters, and so much has yet to happen to one of those three characters, mm-hmm. one of those three Starks. But it's heart-wrenching.
The Hound is serving as a sharp dose of reality, I believe, in this chapter, mm-hmm. with his humor, with his very realistic approach to the world. When Sir Donald High let them through it first, kind of mm-hmm. easily, this next person, when they're close to the wedding, he's not letting him through. He's like, salt pork is not fit for a lord's wedding feast. And he goes, well,
and also the castle's closed.
I got pickled pig's feet too, sir. Yeah. And he's like, yeah. He's
that's not all we have. We don't just have salt pork.
Listen, you know that Sandor knew pickled pig's feet would not be more attractive for the feast. But he's like,
pickled pig's feet? Yeah. Come on in.
Like, I have that too. And he's like, not for the feast, you don't. Nope. I'm a Northman, not some milk-suck Southron knight. And so... Yeah. Clearly, that's the place that Sandor plays in this chapter amidst all of this heavy, heavy imagery with Arya. Very, very well done. And then at the end, of the very end of this chapter, we hear of the reason why, like, she's like, shouldn't we stop? I think it's getting to her, like, at this point. She's just like, I can't take this ride, essentially, any longer. There's Northmen in the tents. She could tell. She was starting to see it. She's like, maybe the Karstarks and the Umbers are here. And she's like, maybe there are Winterfell people here too. Who knows? And he says, your brother will be in the castle, your mother too. You want them or not? She says, yes. What about Sedgkins? And this is the person that the sergeant had told them to go find. He says, Sedgkins can bugger himself with a hot poker. Clegane took out his whip and said, he whips the horse again. It's your bloody brother I want. Kind of a last minute dose of reality. Daddy.
Yeah.
And a last minute bit of imagery before we dive into Catelyn's final chapter. And the Red Wedding.
It sounds like the Hound is going to gain access to the dinner hall if it's the last thing he does. Him and his horse are just going to leap the wall or something and
He'll just whip his way through, yeah.
Yeah.
So poor Sedgkins, if that ends up happening. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
You know, I feel like this is almost a storified version of great mythology, which is these fates intertwining and this very... realistic, sort of sardonic ferryman that's taking Arya to where she needs to go, you know, with his humor and his twisted sense of personality. It's so fitting. And I think that this was incredibly well written and set up. And I cannot wait to get into the next chapter. It's going to be so fun.
I love the Hound. I love how nice he is to Arya, how helpful he is to Arya, rather, and how he was the same way. He's tender with Sansa. And it's just like who he is. He's this man you would not think was this way, but he is very intelligent and competent and interested. And you could argue that he's just interested in money, you know, for getting his own gold back. But in the way of that, he is extremely useful to characters that we really care about, the Starks. And knowing what he does next after, of course, the realization of what is actually going on here, it just makes us, I think, makes him an even greater character.
Well, you can't give him your own for Catelyn's chapter, even though they're kind of in the same place. But
oh, because it's Catelyn's? Damn, because I have one for Arya, but I don't have one for Catelyn. Somebody else go.
For Catelyn, I'm actually going to give it to Walder Frey.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's the line when he's talking after Rosalind speaks for the first time and she's crying, and he says, we'll have music, such sweet music and wine. Heh. The red will run and will put some wrongs aright.
Well done, Micah. For shame, but well done. My own will go to... There's a lot of different things in this chapter that are own worthy. But I think the own should go to Roose Bolton for...
Yeah.
For being this linchpin inside of this plan and for being such a swell actor and for having the audacity to bring a strip of Theon's skin as a token to the Starks from Ramsay and to talk about it freely, to be like, yes, we do have Theon captured and I'm going to do what I want with him. He's a decent bargaining chip and we've got all those Greyjoy men, those damned pirates to deal with. I just feel like that was a pretty ballsy thing to do. And to know, to get a mention of Theon, we're not used to that so far in the book in the way that we have. I know that we're familiar with the storyline from the show, but to those of us that have read for the first time, I'm sure this was a pretty interesting moment to learn that he was being flayed. So,
inch by inch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. There you have it.
No, my own's going to be extremely similar. Lord Bolton, and it is for that same exact moment when they're talking about Theon. Here's a quote. He is Balon Greyjoy's only living son, and now rightful king of the Iron Islands. A captive king has great value as a hostage. And then Catelyn takes objection because she wants to see him dead. But he says, whoever wins the Seastone chair will want Theon Greyjoy dead. Even in chains, he has a better claim than any of his uncles. Hold him, I say, and demand concessions from the Ironborn as the price of his execution. And then it says, Rob considered that reluctantly, but in the end he nodded. Yes, very well. Keep him alive then, for the present. Hold him secure at the Dreadfort till we've retaken the North. Here is an order from the king to basically continue doing to Theon what you were already going to do anyway. From a king who is about to die anyway, and you know it. And you're still reasoning with the king to like get permission to do what you're doing. And if anybody asks Roose Bolton, he can say, the king commanded this. Like, Robb Stark told me to do this to Theon, which is the worst possible thing you could do to somebody else. And so, yeah, Roose Bolton.
Well, it's not like Theon, you know, is a good guy.
I'm not going to fight you on this, Micah.
Well, he's the whole reason that Ramsay even has control of Winterfell at this point.
You know, Ramsay is very charismatic and tricked Theon.
Anyway. for the Arya chapter, I have to give my own to Arya.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just for her recollection of the fact that the Hound was an even worse barber than Yoren.
God damn it. My own is for Yoren for that same reason.
I just love the mention of Yoren.
Yeah.
It was a throwback.
My own goes to Yoren for being a better barber than the Hound.
Are you serious?
All right. Yeah. So we...
Okay. Well, my own goes to the Hound, all right, for having the audacity to steal a wagon of salted pork and to drive that wagon of salted pork into a royal wedding. I mean, royal in the sense of there are royal people there, not royal. Mm-hmm. There's not a king or queen being married, but, you know, I think that is just brilliant. And only Sandor Clegane would have tried to pull that off, and he did. Mm-hmm. So high five, Sandor, and you receive my own.
Nice. I have a lot of love for Yoren because of where I'm at rewatching the series because he's currently taking her to the wall. But yeah, seeing him get mentioned and that he is a better barber than the Hound is one more skill to his CV.
That's not bad.
Which he won't need anymore.
Well, of course, we got a bunch of owns sent in by you, the listeners. And we can head on over to Facebook first where... we had a lot of good owns sent in, scrawled upon our wall. The first from our council member, Simon.
Hello, Simon.
Who says, you see what I did there?
Yes.
Yeah.
The own goes to the twins. Arya observes the castle as spooky and mysterious, like something from one of old Nan's tales. Imagine in 1,000 years how this place will be spoken about. Even if all the Freys are long gone and dead, the castle where a king was betrayed and murdered, where one of the oldest laws in the world were broken, the rule of Guestright. Maybe then, too, in 1,000 years, a boy like Bran will like the story of the twins because he, too, likes scary stories.
I love this.
You know, this Guestright thing, I just wish somewhere that there's a religion honoring, that there's this God figure who protects the guest, right? Like, where is the vengeance? Where is the actual repercussion for breaking this rule, which is one of the oldest rules, as Simon points out? And I want to know. I want to know what penalty breaking this guest right will bring upon these damn Freys, and we haven't seen it yet. So
hopefully really terrible, terrible penalties.
Yeah.
Great own, Simon.
Great own. We got a somewhat of a comical image. I love you can do this on social media. You can include an image as your own. Grace Falula says pretty much, and it's an image of a wolf running and running. It says, I am the king of the north. I will avenge my father. And then it's a photo of that same wolf upended on his face with legs in the air, flailed. And
he slipped.
He slipped and fell.
I think the first image is a wolf. The second is a dog. And the third is a polar bear.
That's what it kind of looks like. Yeah. That's interesting.
You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a, well, it's not actually a polar bear, but he's got
it's
a
the,
face.
It's
like
the evolution of a dire wolf in the world of Westeros, oh, wow. Right?
Dire wolves are probably all three of those things that had sex with each other.
Yeah, they have a master ball. Wow. Joe Ludvigson writes in. He says, excellent. These chapters are so memorable. I agree. Not just because of what happens and the effect that it all has moving forward, but the way it is written. I've never forgotten how each word written, each beat made me feel. I hope you enjoy the experience. And I absolutely have. And I think that my friends here have as well.
Yeah. I love this throwback mention. Christina V. Klein, drum roll for Roose Trolton. Mm-hmm. How long has it been since we have called him that, right, on this
spiffed
show?
Old spiffed.
Oh, I love
it. It's great because before he worked for Watchers, you know, before Watchers even existed, he was listening to Game of Thrones and threw down Roose Trolton. So, yeah, it's a great callback.
Roose Trolton gets Christina's own. What a calm and crafty liar. Like the Kaiser Soze, also good reference.
Yes.
Kaiser Soze of Westeros, of all the known world on planet Hodor, even.
Perfect.
I guess the planet is called Hodor.
That makes sense.
How much of his story can we even believe? Sure, some of these details may be true, at least as much as it can be corroborated, but I wonder, Iwalda, and Hound Arya, how I adore these characters together, especially the moment as they're approaching the twins near the loud and terrible music. Arya says so, and he makes a sound that might have been a laugh before making a jest of his own. Aw, they're bonding. P.S. We do have the next two before the break. I have faith in your goo-bilities, guys. That's right. It's a little early to mention this, but there's yet another Catelyn and Arya chapter following.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We also heard
so much
from
pain.
So yeah, much pain in so few pain. Pages.
Ivana Svetanovic.
Svetanovic.
Owned for the Catelyn chapter goes to Lord Walder Frey for practically telling Rob what is going to happen, but in a way that nobody on Rob's side could understand it at the time. We'll have music, such sweet music, and wine. Erica, I need you to do a heh.
Heh!
The red will run. And we'll put some wrongs aright. He also tells Rob, you wanted crossing, and I gave it to you, and you never said mayhaps. An oblique reference to a child's game popular at the Twins.
This is a reference to our chapter reading.
Oh, okay.
The Twins, which you saw. The two assholish 8-year-old Freys, Litter Walder, and Big Walder playing in Winterfell with Bran and Rickon in a Clash of Kings.
So long
ago.
The
rules are that you ask the Lord of the Crossing to pass the river, and he has a stick and can ask you to make vows and promises. But the trick is to say mayhaps when he's not paying attention. Then you can try to take his stick and knock him into the water and win the game. But if you do that and haven't said mayhaps, you're out of the game. So Lord Walder is really telling Rob he's out of the game. And when we now also know who taught the two little Walders that game, and that Lord Walder's way of thinking and emotional maturity is that of an 8-year-old.
This is my favorite thing.
That is amazing.
Great. Amazing.
That is the level that George is writing on.
Do you remember how long ago that was set up and we were talking about it? I can't remember if we had experienced the Red Wedding through the show yet, Mike. I think we had, and you were like, this is foreshadowing this. Love it. So long ago. Peggy scrawls, intuition gets the own in the Catelyn chapter. They should have listened to the wolf and her gut.
Can't hear it over all that water.
Colton scrawls, owned to Walder Frey. As his legs are no longer fit to kneel, yet to that which lies between is still young and viril. Arya, own to Green Fork, for its ominous growling like a lion in its den. Yeah, we got that. We got it. Thanks, Colton.
And we heard from Tim Mulligan, who says, own to Grey Wynn for being the only member of Rob's crew to know that something is up. Also wanted to mention that a couple chapters ago, we learned that Balin Greyjoy's lost brother, who returned the day King Balon died, is nicknamed the Crow's Eye. Think he is our drowned crow perched on the shoulder of a faceless man? Question mark. Also, every time a faceless man is mentioned, I always ask myself, where's Jaqen? And what was his mission in Westeros? Huh.
These are very astute questions.
So, of course, when we met with the ghost of High Heart, right?
Yeah.
She had mentioned this drowned crow perched on the shoulder of a faceless man, and then not long thereafter we learned of the death of Balin Greyjoy. So, could be a connection between Euron Greyjoy, the Crow's Eye, and what happened to Balin.
I'm so pleased that all of Jaqen is like ahead of me in the show right now. Like, she's about to meet him. She's at Harrenhal, and she's about to meet him. She rescued him the other day, but...
Oh, when you're watching. I was like,
when I'm watching in the show. Yeah, my rewatch. Sorry, sorry, that was confusing. Yeah.
All right. See him in season 5.
Yeah. So, those were all the owns we got on Facebook. We did get a few on Twitter. The first from Zen Timberwolf. I love that name.
That's pretty good.
Peaceful.
My own goes to Edmure for helping clean up Rob's mess and getting a better deal out of it with Walder's only hot daughter.
Well, Joe Schaefer writes, own has to go to GRRM for building a sense of dread and oncoming doom despite the appearance that everything is going so well. Very true. Yep. Very doom, very dread, much bad.
And Gil Pound writes in, own for Arya goes to the Hound. Quote, what about Sedgkins, the Hound? Sedgkins can bugger himself with a hot poker.
Perfect. Uh-huh. I think that's a fabulous way to wrap up our listener owns this week. And for those of you listening that haven't written in ever, because there's a lot of you, and those of you listening that have, that maybe kind of wait to this until the season for the musical aspect where Eric reads it very quickly and it's exciting, think to yourself, when will I get the opportunity to send in my own for the Red Wedding ever again? Because that's what's going to happen. We have some interesting things planned between here and the season's beginning. But before all of that, we have the Red Wedding to tend to. So think, feel, ruminate, and send in your owns. Eric will tell you how to do it.
If you would like to submit your owns for the Red Wedding, Catelyn and Arya chapter following, do so via Facebook. Facebook.com/GameOfOwns. That's our wall. You can scroll upon it. Also, we have plenty of exciting, fun memes and things on there that we share from us to you. But that's a way to send us your owns. Also, you can do so on Twitter, @ReplyUs, @GameOfOwns on Twitter. You know, compose a tweet, tell us what you like, and @ReplyUs with it. And also emails for your longer format owns. contact@GameOfOwns.com is the address. Simply compose an email using your nearest available web client.
Yes. And yes, one other way you can get in touch with the show is on iTunes. You can leave a rating and review of the show. And given that the television series is about to come back in just about 3 weeks, we know there are going to be a lot of listeners similar to yourselves who are looking for something that discusses what's going on in the world of Westeros. So we thank you in advance. Head on over to iTunes. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable in the month of March.
That's true.
Just like our good friend SoCal Jen, who said, if you watch Game of Thrones, you have to listen to this podcast. As in, we also heard, and I'm reading a few here because it's been a while, I think, since we read these reviews, but these are fairly recent. We also heard from our good friend, Original Samshu, who says, top tier Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire podcast. Woo. It is fast-paced and well-edited. Zach, thank you for well-editing the show. The chemistry between the hosts is refreshing and comfortable. I like the combination of serious knowledge and fresh eyes looking at what can be well-worn territory in different hands. Bravo.
Thank you. Are we good friends with all of these people? Like, as soon as they give us 5 stars, we're like, that's all it takes to be our friend. Like, oh, we're yes. friends with you. Okay, good. Well, can you read Bobcat C6's review? Because his name is super cool.
He says, the go-to podcast. I like how he did that. Goo is the glue for Game of Thrones. Insightful commentary from a group you love to hang out with. Not a single person that you'd like to feed to Drogon, unlike many of the competitors.
Ooh.
Content aimed at both Sullied and Unsullied. Spoilers avoided without being pompous jerks. Again, unlike others. It's the place to go for serious Game of Thrones viewers. Sorry about Kate. Both hopeful young men and wistful old farts gonna miss that laugh. Aww. But maybe Eric could substitute with a little practice. But seriously, folks, this is the one. So thank you, Bobcat, for that. He's calling me.
Oh, bat phone, Micah. We promised we'd answer if they ever called.
And then finally, one review here, Eric, because I know you also do this podcast. 5 stars are simply not enough, but they'll do. This is from TwirlOnFire08, and I'm assuming it's her, but you never know. I heard of this podcast through Alohomora. I started listening about a month or so ago, and I'm only halfway through. I have switched.
Is it George Martin?
They're leaving a message.
Is it George Martin calling? You want us to finish Winds of Winter for you? I don't know, George. That seems like a pretty big task. Why don't you just skip a few cons?
George, rate this laugh. Give it a 1 to 10. How much does this laugh sound like Kate?
kind of perfectly like it.
All right, let's get through. I'm all sorry right, about right, that. Right. I started listening about a month or so ago, and I'm only halfway through. I've switched from an Apple device to a Samsung and have logged onto my iTunes for the specific reason that this show deserved their 5-star iTunes reviews.
Oh, wow.
I love how they focus on both the books and the show, drawing similarities from other works of art and literature. My favorite is when they read excerpts from the books. Besides the slight name mispronunciation, since just accepted.
We all do.
It's how we interpret it, okay? Twirl on fire.
If that's your real name.
Yeah.
Hey, Twirl on fire.
It's a free fucking show. I can't find anything wrong with these guys. This podcast is exactly what I've been looking for. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
So thanks. And I'm sure Eric is excited that you learned about us through Alohomora, which is a Harry Potter podcast that Eric is involved with. So,
definitely.
We really appreciate these reviews. And I really like hearing from people that, you know, they just started the show, not that long ago, and they're making their way through it. She's halfway through, or he is halfway through. And that's a lot of episodes. You know, we're on, 264?
Yep.
I read an email a few days back that came through, and the listener said that they had just finished their second listen through of every episode. And,
oh my God!
Yeah, and I was like, wow, that is some love for Game of Thrones. So it's a real pleasure to share our conversations and our love for the series with you all, and it's amazing to hear nice words sent in review form. Obviously, not everyone can have the time to do something like this, but to those of you that do, we greatly appreciate it. And to those of you who don't, we still love you.
Yeah.
I would like to just write an open letter now to that listener who wrote to us, although I can just reply in the email. But okay. No, open letter to everybody. If you are going through our show and finding that you are wanting even more content than what can be found on our busty podcast feed of boasting 264 episodes, please remember there is also Patreon. Our patreon.com/goofeed has a number of bonus content all that can be attained by becoming one of our bannermen. Isn't that right, Zach?
Yes.
It's very true.
Sorry, I could sense my heater was coming on, so I had to throw that away quick.
My name is Mika. I'm a good friend of... I'm actually petting my dog right now. He looks very happy.
How does that work on Starbucks cups?
getting back to it, there are a number of things that we do that are related to Thrones, and even some that aren't, but which we make available to our closest friends, our subscribers, our small council, and to find out basically what those things are and to see if you yourself might be interested, please visit patreon.com. Yeah. /goo.
These donations are what keeps the show afloat and what opens up opportunities for us to do interesting things in the future, like a few impending live shows that we have yet to discuss. know, the camel stuff.
The camel.
Wait, what?
Yeah, we're buying a camel.
We're buying a camel. It's going to be a, we've adopted a camel. We've adopted a camel. From funds. Serbia.
We adopted, yeah, that's much better. Because honestly, I mean, if we bought it and Strike saw it, it'd probably be the end of the camel, to be honest with you.
No, they'll be best friends.
Unless
a little
we, you know, we
camel.
Got them.
Camels that's, kick.
Camels do kick.
But as both of these guys mentioned, it's really great content. Maybe I'm biased in saying that, but, you know, just in terms of behind the scenes of everything that we do here on the show, and, you know, actually Eric and I, not that long ago, recorded the Red Wedding chapter together, live and in person, and that's going to be going up on our Patreon.
Yes.
And we have regular meetings with what we call our small council. We Google Hangout with them, and really great way to get to know a lot of the listeners out there. We really enjoy spending time with them and getting to know them, talking even more Thrones than we do here.
And they helped us make some decisions regarding the show very recently, which is kind of the whole purpose of having a small council. So that's also a really nice mechanic, and that was fun to do. And in general, making the chapters with all the extra content is super fun, and providing the chapter readings has been a really fun process for us, just to dive even deeper into the books and to give kind of our own personal takes during those recordings. So that's going to be fun. And when we stop for this new season, we have that opening of our content that's going to be really interesting to fill, and we have a plan for that we'll probably share on next week's episode or some week approaching the show beginning, because I think it's a surprise that you guys will enjoy. So stick around for that.
Definitely stick around. If there's one time to not leave the show, it's now. So don't do it.
All right, guys, I'm leaving.
Well, you should leave now
stick
because the show is
the
ending. You are hearing some music right now. And next week, we finally reach the fateful conclusion. Things aren't really concluded, but we are finally at the Red Wedding. It's here.
The rains are falling.
The river's churning.
Guys, you can hear it.